Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie streaming and pop culture related. I'm your host, Cozy, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And, dude, it's great to be back.
Great to see you back, Cozy. Cheers again.
It felt great actually doing that, just running through it. I actually haven't done that in, like, what, geez, 2 months?
Oh, man, it's been a while, listeners. It's been a while. Definitely... Right, we were lost at sea. If you've ever seen a Castaway with Tom Hanks, that's what Cozy was up to.
Dude, I was cast away. Work, like, geez, like, seriously, work had me just cast away in different, almost like different cities, almost like every other week, it seemed, at times. And, you know,
Cozy's ass got gainfully employed, y'all. You wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, and basically, no, I was like too good at the job. And they were just like, hey, man, can you come over here and just fix this mess that this other guy did? Oh, can you come over here and fix this mess in, like, another freaking state? So, yeah.
We're all proud of Cozy for beating the bum allegations.
Dude, seriously, those allegations were unwarranted. I didn't like them. I had to beat them. And, yeah, I'm a better man for it. And I think we have a better show for it. And, like, look, so this isn't, it's not a, you wouldn't call this a reboot, would you? Like, I hate that term, like, reboot.
Don't call it a comeback,
don't
right?
Call it a comeback. Don't call it a reboot. no, I feel as though, like, you know, that time off, almost that little bit of a hiatus, you know, gave us the time to, like, you know, recoup, come up with some really cool ideas, cool stuff you wanted to do. And, yeah, I'm excited just to be back and hitting this again with you, man.
No, we're hoping to, we got some plans, listeners. Obviously, Cozy's going to stay gainfully employed, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere.
Same on my end. You know, obviously, the more listeners we get, maybe we can make this our gainful employment. Wink,
that
wink.
That would be really cool, but we do appreciate you listeners, all 10 of you.
So, one at a time, baby. One at a time.
Of course.
No, but now, Cozy, you know what? Tell us a little bit about it. Tell us a little bit about life on the job, life on the road.
Yeah.
What you were going through. Tell us about your shitty bosses.
Well, yeah, you know, not...
no real names.
Yeah, no, like obviously not. And honestly, like, all my bosses really were, like, really helpful and instrumental in just, like, you know, helping me just, like, learn the trade. Like, I'm in project management, and in that one, it's like logistics and, like, working with, like, different, like, warehouses and, like, making sure they're all up to code and up to snuff and make sure they're good. So, like, you know, like, just the ups and downs of, like, juggling different, like, issues and problems, because, you know, I'm having to deal with, like the managers of the warehouse and, like, my manager and, like, workers and, like, contractors, and, like, you're having to juggle many different, or spin many different plates, as I want to call it. And I was able just to do that, but it was really, really hard initially, and just encounters with just different personalities, as I want to call it.
Definitely an interesting way to put it.
It really was just different personalities, and, you know, like, had to kind of grow up there, you know, and, like, kind of step out of my comfort zone and, like, really interact with and work with, you know, different personalities. And, like, you know, it kind of felt like, remember in, remember in the first Karate Kid, 84 one, when he, so when Daniel's son first got, to California, just that kind of,
fish out of water,
like, small fish in a really, really big pond. And, like, you know, I'd learned all this stuff in graduate school. I'm like, hey, man, I felt like, you know, I got this stuff. I know how to, like, manage stuff, you know, like, my degree is in project management. You know, it's in there. I have, like, a piece of paper that says that, like, I'm badass at this. And then, like, I'm thrown into, like, the real world. I'm having to shake hands with, like, real people. And, like, all that book smart stuff, like, just was thrown out the window. And it was really, really cool to see, like, me, like, just fall on my face a little bit and kind of learn just how to really, like, you know, work with people, you know, clash sometimes with, like, different personalities and, like, you know, come out the other end. And, like, you know, I feel better for, you know, I definitely feel like cast away in terms of, like, the different locations and just how, you know, isolating it is. Being in hotel rooms a lot, you know, having a eating a lot of chilies at night, you know, just, you know, missed the home cooking, but, you know, I'm a lot better.
Cozy was in some white hick ass towns. It's the only way I can say, at least I got to go to Denver when I get all my work trips and stuff. You know, I get some, like, you know, weird off topic thing, but Denver has, like, strange Mexican food.
Strange, right? In a good way, or
no, like, not in a good way. Like, you'll go, like, oh, like, the restaurant will have tacos, and you'll be like, oh, interesting. Uh-huh. I'll get these fish tacos. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't know. It's like some weird Taco Bell slash proper food, like white food hybrid. Or it's like they just got like white food meat on it, but they got like the nacho taco shells.
Like the hard shell. It's white taco night, sorry.
It's a straight, like you're coming from Tex-Mex. Here in Texas, obviously, we got a lot of
Tex-Mex.
We got a lot of actual authentic Mexican food. Yeah. I know plenty of actual Mexicans. You know, like make real, like
authentic,
from the
yeah.
Right. So I got like full experience and all kinds of delicious Mexican food, and Denver ate it. Denver ate it on that.
You hear that, Denver? You need to step up your game, Broncos.
But no, I wanted to one underrated thing with what Kosi said that I don't think he touched enough on.
What was that?
Is a project manager, y'all. Kosi is managing and giving orders to white people. Just imagine how white proud his ancestors might feel.
It's not just white people, but no. I think I told you guys this in the chat.
Take some credit, Kosi.
No. Juan is correct, just to an extent. Like one of the first projects I was on, like the whole crew just happened. everyone just happened to be white, and even they themselves, like they made like one of them pointed out to me, like, hey man, like they looked around and just I was the only black guy there, and I was like, all right, guys. Go to work. And I literally said that. And I texted you guys in the chat, like, hey guys, this is my get back or something. But
I'm telling you, man, his ancestors are looking on from, what is it, the Mufasa plane?
Oh, the ancestral plane.
The ancestral plane.
That's a way better term.
That's way better. The Mufasa plane.
The Mufasa plane. Yeah, from the
because they had it right the first time.
I love how I knew exactly what you meant by that, but I was like, you know, ancestral
Simba.
No, but I think that's one of those things in the first few weeks, like having that kind of like fun outlook on it. It really helped me like ease into it, not be so uptight, like sharing like pictures and like funny memes with you guys. But yeah, it was great to just finally come back to. Back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity for you oldies out there. But yeah, it feels great to be back and talk about movies. And dude, we have pretty cool
dropping Obama reference.
Obama and also Eminem reference.
No, I'm just joking. He did it. Obama was dropping Lose Yourself Today at a rally.
Oh, really?
Or maybe yesterday or something.
Obama.
he was doing at a rally with Eminem.
Oh.
But, yeah, no, we're glad to see that, Kosi. We're glad to see you gainfully employed, making that money.
Yes, sir.
Getting that paper. But, yeah, hopefully we can get a good show for you guys and have a good setup to keep a little more consistency, not have some of these issues we've had the last few months. Hopefully our background plans will be enough to keep us on a consistent schedule.
No, Juan's right. We definitely went back to the lab again to reference Eminem to just make sure we, you know, tighten up the things with the show and, you know, just give you listeners a quality product. But anyway, yeah, going into the actual show, we have a good slate today. So what's first on top?
All right, so we're gonna take it back to some of the classics. We're gonna take you through some trailer trash.
Oh man,
we're gonna give you the Nosferatu trailer, the newest trailer that came out a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and go over the trailer just came out today actually for Severance season 2.
Oh man,
the Big Apple TV show.
Yes, sir.
And then after that, we're gonna review the first half of the Penguin show.
First four episodes.
We'll give some of y'all a chance to catch up when episode 5 came out
a
few days ago. It came out a little bit ago. But yeah, hopefully we got an exciting episode for you guys. So we'll start with some trailer trash.
And the first one we're going to be looking at is the new Nosferatu trailer. It's the 2024 film from Robert Eggers. Lego My Eggers, our friend Robert Eggers. He's the guy that did what was it? The
Northman.
The Northman, yep.
Lighthouse?
Lighthouse. That crazy movie, yeah. Like his first breakout movie, The Witch, with Anya Taylor-Joy.
The Witch with a double V.
Yep, the Vivitch. Yeah, so like
Vivitch.
So yeah, so Robert Eggers is the kind of director who like whatever he does, like I'm there day one, and this note, this is no different. This is a remake of the 1922 classic horror film Nosferatu, and it stars Lily Rose Depp. She's the daughter of Johnny Depp. Nicholas Holt, Emma Corrin, who we just saw in Deadpool Wolverine. She was she played Cassandra Nova.
Okay.
Willem Dafoe, always, he always seems to pop up in Robert Eggers movies. Yeah.
He has a perfect face for Robert Eggers.
He's
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I last saw him in Poor Things. That's the most recent one I saw him in. And also Bill Skarsgård as Count Orlok or Nosferatu to round out the cast. So stacked cast comes out this December, just in time for
December 25th.
Yeah, Christmas. We're getting bitten by a vampire on Christmas.
Not your usual Christmas movie.
Of course, it's a great holiday fun for the whole family with Robert Eggers. yeah, we just watched that trailer. It was great, great looking trailer. But Juan, like, what did you think of the trailer just right off the top?
So obviously the visuals are spectacular.
Of course.
One of my favorite visual scenes was where you see the shadow of his hand, like he's pointing the Nosferatu, that kind of coil with the long hands, the kind of claw-like vampire hands.
You mean when it's over the city, the shadow? Oh,
the
that
shadow
was great.
Is going over the city in a kind of a rapid, unsettling way. Obviously, you get the metaphor of, you know, his shadow, his grasp
looming
over the city.
His control over people.
Robert Eggers knows how to put how to create visual metaphors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He can be a little artsy. He's not for everybody's tastes, right? He doesn't got that mass appeal necessarily.
But he definitely has his own distinct style and visual language of his film, as you said. So I love that
about him. Metaphorical language. Yeah. He really puts the personality of his characters into the visual aspects of the movie. Does that make sense?
Yep, and case in point with Lily Rose Depp, as that's the main character she's playing, she's, you know, being haunted by Count Orlok, and you could feel like that tension.
She's the traditional, pure-hearted virgin that tends to show up in these monster movies. And obviously the vampire loves that sweet sweet virgin blood.
He feeds off of that, and like we could feel like, as his hand looms over, and like remember at the very end, like with in the window, and like you see his shadow in the window seal sheet.
Silhouette in the, he's not really there. But you know his presence is there. You know he wants her. You know that's his goal.
And in a way, and like I saw in the trailer too, like she's even saying she's kind of into it in a way. Like he's definitely seduced her, like with his powers and like his manipulation, and like she's kind of succumbing to them. I really would love to see. I'm looking forward to seeing just like this dive into madness. Because I think that's another theme with Robert Eggers' movies I've seen. It's he loves the descent into chaos and madness, and like he makes it look.
Yeah, well, the
gorgeous,
the pigeon scene will definitely is.
Oh, the seagull, he beats
the
it up.
Seagull. There we go. The seagull scene is
Batman
the most purely visual representation of somebody going frustratingly mad.
He beat the shit out of that seagull.
Him jacking his own dick off with his fucking sawdust as sandpaper hands.
Dude, and they made
he ain't got no lotion.
They made him. And Robert Eggers made it a point to make sure you knew what his hands looked like. Again,
it's some dirty, greasy, worn-out hands. You know, if you've ever done some manual labor, not that me and Kosi can talk, but if you've ever done some serious manual labor, you know what those hands you know what those hands look like, right?
Yeah, it's not the hands you want to.
It's not the hands you want to jack off with.
Oh man! But,
listen. This looks like it's gonna shape up. This is looking like a good year for horror films. Cozy, what do you think of Smile 2? Give a little insight on that. Just a quick one liner on that.
Yeah, Smile 2. Honestly, like I, it's a great. It's one of those sequels where it's really built upon and is better than the original Smile, the 2022 film by Parker Finn. Blast on the scene, you know, with those creepy trailers, the people smiling.
Yeah,
I thought, you know, it felt almost like one of the, you know those cheap Blumhouse movies that came out.
Yes.
It felt like that, like gimmicky, but Man, it...
That movie's going to be fun, though.
Yeah, but no, Smile,
the first I love one. Malignant, and that was peak 90s.
So fun.
Peak 90s.
Early 2000s-esque, like, yeah. Oh, it would have been great. Late night TV-esque.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, but the first Smile, like, Parker Finn, the director, what he did so well was, like, he was able to blend, like, the paranoia with just this monster and have it kind of not just be a cheap jump scare thing, but it had something to say about, you know, mental health and illness. And then going into this one, with Naomi Scott as the it's about a pop star who gets this almost like a virus this entity that like takes the shape of people smiling at her, and you know it's scary for that to happen to a pop star like Lady Gaga-esque pop star who has millions of fans smiling at her at all times. So like it showed her descent into madness, and Naomi Scott, I know like horror movie people don't really get a lot of love for like best actor awards. Famously, Toni Collette did not even get nominated for her role in 2018.
Lee Curtis should have been nominated at some point.
Yeah, 2018's Hereditary. Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode just across 40 years. I think Naomi Scott in her role as Sky Riley should get some kind of nomination, because what she did in this role, like the depth she went to, just the roller coaster from start to finish they took her on was amazing. And just, and like it's crazy how Parker Finn, I almost thought like it was a different guy that directed this second one, because like, you know, he just improved upon just shot selection, how it's made, like it's slightly bigger budget, but he made it work. So I just loved how he improved upon himself. Looking forward to what he does in a third movie, if he does. So watch Smile 2. It's out right now in theaters. And yeah, 2024 is a great year for horror.
You hear anything about Terrifier 3?
Terrifier 3, look, so I love horror, but I have like a pretty weak stomach, and
yeah, the stuff
I've seen in Terrifier 2.
That's why I couldn't watch The Substance. I've heard good things about The Substance.
I want to see The Substance. Look, In a Violent Nature has one of the greatest kills I've ever seen, and like it's not like, but it's like done in a cool way. The Terrifier series, it kind of like relishes in the horror, and to me that kind of turns me off a bit. So
yeah, I can't do.
I haven't watched three
porn. I can't do torture porn.
Like, they really.
I love horror movies. See, I love the turnaround the horror movies made right around the time of Conjuring and Insidious.
Yeah, like the late 2010s, like 2010, late 2010s.
Because horror movies, I don't know. I feel like we're like, you know, talking on the porch, but back in our day, horror movies used to be a lot of gore porn,
torture
porn. Hostel was, I think, the peak example.
Yeah, Saw was 2004, and Hostel was like 3 years later.
A lot
later,
of jump scares, a lot of slasher, like cheap films. Somewhere around the time of Conjuring, people decided to say, hey, we can just make a scary fucking movie.
And like a really, and like going back to like a studio, a big studio, like Warner Brothers made The Conjuring, like a mainstream studio making a horror movie, putting some money behind it, and like James Wan, like that was a
I'll never great forget matchup. That movie. Okay, that movie has no cuss words. There's barely any blood. None of the main characters really die. Nope. There's really not that much bad stuff, but it's rated R. I swear to God, it's just too fucking scary. It's just too fucking scary. No, we can't allow this.
They couldn't write that in the MPAA, like, oh, too spooky, but they just like, oh, for scary images or whatever.
Yeah, like something along those lines. So I'm serious, guys. It's nothing. I think there's like going to be two cuss words in the movie. It's like some Christian-ass movie.
But Juan, those ghost hands in the dark.
But you know what? And it's gone up from there. We've now seen stuff like Hereditary.
Yep.
We've seen Jordan Peele come up with high concept films like Get Out like Us.
Mm-hmm.
What was the newest one?
Nope was great.
We've seen an artistic renaissance.
Even Barbarian. Barbarian's another one that was incredible. Malignant's another one. Like, yeah, renaissance.
We watched one this year. Late Night with the Devil.
Late Night with the Devil. Yeah.
These kinds of movies, yeah, they have some jump scares. They have a little bit of gore and stuff in them. But it's such high concept movies. And I love, they're all so low budget that they can get away with this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Theaters in general, movies in general, are going through a little bit of a rough time in Hollywood, I think we could all say. The superhero bubble has seemingly at least somewhat burst.
I think more so like viewers are now more choosy with what they go to see, superhero movies in general. Like we saw Deadpool Wolverine, like the most proper movie ever made, but nobody went to go see Joker Folie à Deux. So like people now are like really, really really
word of mouth is everything. Yeah,
yes, days. People are now being very, very deliberate with their money, with what they want to go see. Yeah.
But I will say, for whatever other issues we're having, we are in a golden age, and we have been in a golden age.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
Of horror movies,
yeah.
Just all kinds of brilliant stuff. You got some slashers. You got the Scream, series making duology, a strong comeback. Yeah. Great stuff. No,
and, yeah, and Nosferatu.
Something for everything. Yeah. Something for everything.
And Nosferatu, though it is a remake, Robert Eggers really looks like he has something to say with this, and it just looks gorgeous. And again,
yeah, it is a remake. But how many people have really watched the movie from 1922?
Of course.
You know what I mean?
It's one of the oldest.
We all know it's there. We've all seen that image of Nosferatu in the doorway, looking all scary.
It like What We Do in the Shadows kind of made made fun of that character. Like you've seen it all. So like
definitely.
Yeah. Robert Eggers is gonna give his take on that, and it's gonna come to theaters.
I think it's gonna modernize and make it scary.
Again. Oh yeah, yeah.
I think the name Nosferatu is gonna mean something other than just a reference to an old school vampire.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. No fun times. So continuing on, we got Severance season 2.
Man.
So finally,
Severance.
Even the trailer before we get into too much, even the trailer makes a joke about how freaking long it's been.
Yeah, again,
plus years.
So it's been two years since Severance, the first season. It's the Apple Plus TV series. It's created by Dan Erickson, directed by Ben Stiller in some aspects. He's also a producer. Stars Adam Scott, Zach Terry, John Turturro, Christopher Walken, Patricia Arquette. Stacked cast. Just love this show. It's on Apple TV Plus, and yeah. It's been like 2 years since we've seen any of these people on screen.
So for the viewers, a little bit of a recap. I'm sure we'll have a proper recap when the show airs. But for a little bit of a recap, the concept of the show is basically it's a sci-fi, it's a low sci-fi show, right? Where it's like a kind of modern-ish world with one big technology change, which is that this company has the ability to
sever.
People's minds in a way, like their actual conscious mind, in a way that when they come into work, their work mind is completely separate from their real life mind.
Which, in concept, as crazy as it sounds, could be efficient because you can separate that.
Kind of cool, right?
On paper,
it sounds dystopian. But if you're not like, if you don't like hate work, if you're like, oh yeah, I'm the kind of guy that works, it doesn't sound totally awful. Like, okay, I come into work, I turn off my brain, do whatever I have to. The guy who's there is not thinking about how you'd rather be at home, playing video games and catching up on the penguin and, you know, whatever else, right? He's just like at work, he doesn't know anything else. It sounds in some ways like it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Nope.
Right? Am I crazy? Right? It's but, you know, The show kind of shows that. The show shows that these characters often choose that, and not in a dystopian, like, oh, they choose that because it's either that or starvation on the streets. Like, the main character actively chooses it as a way to handle the grief he has from losing his wife.
And I think what makes it dystopian is the fact that this Lumen Industries has this available to the public.
Industries is the main company. Yeah. The main company that has this technology. It's not a generalized, everybody has this all the time. It's this
company
that has it. It is to protect their proprietary information. Curious thing about the show is a little bit of a mystery box in that we don't know what the company does.
It's great. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Lost. Definitely reminds me of like Office Space a little bit, but like a creepy version of Office Space.
The scenes of them working have an Office Space type vibe where they're kind of simple, goofy characters that are into their job. The stupid stuff you see in offices to like motivate employees, like, oh, here's a little pen pad, a little notepad with the little company logo, or a cup with the company logo. Oh, here's a little pizza party, or oh, we're gonna have a little bit of music. That kind of stupid stuff nobody really likes as a reward in real life. You know, we'd all rather have bonuses or better pay or whatever else, or at least good. Like, okay, we're gonna have like a celebration as a food. Don't have a pizza party. Like, you know, bring in some Chick-fil-A, bring in some proper food, bring in some barbecue. You know.
I'd go think bigger one.
Bro, Chick-fil-A makes some good food.
We will throw you in the trash if you just bring us Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A got some good stuff. It's better than pizza. Don't disrespect the Lord's chicken.
You're right.
You're right. Let's talk about some barbecue. Let's talk about some proper food.
Yeah, some real food. Yeah.
Right? Trying to get some nice food at the company. But no, these are the kind of people who they don't know any better. So the company gives them a little pen with the company letterhead and tells them it's a prize and they get excited. Right?
Yeah. What I love about Severance, it kind of sort of captures like how, what if you just got fed up with that? And that can be fed up and that could cause its own anxiety. And like, I loved how in the trailer for season two, we're met with that same anxiety with Adam Scott's character. And like, it reminded me a lot of the movie called Brazil. It's a Terry Gilliam movie about kind of this similar concept about like what's real, what's not, if you could maybe almost lobotomize yourself. So I love the fact that like it kind of took that idea of what if we took the anxiety of not being like respected or being valued as a worker like that and like put that onto a character. So I love that in that season two trailer.
That's a good point.
Yeah, can't wait.
So the way season one ended and it leads right into this one. Basically, there's a big reveal.
Spoiler alert for you guys who haven't finished season one of Severance.
Yeah, 2 years ago, so it's on you at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely fair game now.
But one of the main characters, this lady that comes in, turns out to actually be the daughter of the owner of the company.
Bum, bum, bum.
And she went into the severance program when she severed herself and started working there kind of as a way to prove that it was safe, that it wasn't so bad. And then her actual alter ego within the severed employee was basically like, fuck this.
Scorched earth.
What the fuck is going on? No, I didn't sign up for this. She actively tries to kill herself. Like as a way to get back at her real world alter ego. She's like, oh, I can't have a real life. Okay, I'm going to kill myself as a middle finger to you for putting me in this scenario. Anyway, so she's the company's owner, so they figure out a way where the company's daughter is supposed to be giving a speech promoting the severance program, and instead the worker version alter ego takes over and tells the whole world, hey, everything is fucked. Cats, everything is a lie.
Yep.
Everything is awful. Basically, all the worker little bees inside start to realize there's an outside world and start to realize just how much they're missing.
And they go,
right?
And they go nuts.
They basically start to want an outside life. They don't just want to work. They start to want actual connection to other people. They want to start to have a full life. It's not that they hate their other alter egos necessarily. It's more along the lines of, you know, that it's once they realize there's something more than just, you know, little pizza parties and notepads and stuff, once they realize there's more to want, they rebel.
And I think what we're going to discover in season two of this, again, I have no insider information, but I think what we're going to see in season two is once they realize that open world, they'll experience that and they'll see sometimes the grass isn't always greener, but they'll understand more and be better for it, but they're going to, you know, encounter their own set of different circumstances and challenges, which I can't wait for. This cast is amazing. We have Adam Scott, we have Zach Sherry, we have Britt Lower, Tramell Tillman, John Turturro, Christopher Walken, Patricia Arquette. Again, just a really stacked cast that who are coming back for this second season. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this. And
stack cast indeed. Going into the trailer, some of the specifics of the trailer a little bit.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah,
it's a so honestly, it's almost more of a teaser. It's a very high concept,
a teaser,
artistic trailer.
Love the camera movement of like on Adam Scott's face.
So
like,
you kind of get it's kind of following up immediately on the events of the final season and Adam Scott's characters back in Lumen, his severed characters back in his work site, and you can tell. You know, he's unsettled, he's hectic, his mind's racing, you know, things have popped up for
him.
Very
amazing shot.
And then he kind of gets back to his office, and he sees a similar setup but with different faces.
That was a great reveal.
Picking girl from Arrested Development.
Aliyah Shawkat. I love her.
Yeah, that's the only one you really recognize. Yeah. And then I forgot his name. The main black guy from the first season one. The main like supervisor. Supervisor. Yeah, yes. Forgot his real his actor's name. He comes in. He makes a little joke about how it's been a long time since we've seen him.
2 years, brother.
Lampshading a little bit how long it's been. And then some cool music starts to play, some hip little music. It's definitely more of a teaser than giving away anything, but it sets the tone
for
what you're expecting. He's unsettled, he's frantic, he's trying to get back control.
And then
Lumen is trying to reimpose the control it had, reimpose its kind of dystopian vision, a top-down vision.
His boss walked in with balloons, like smiling with balloons with his Adam Scott's face on it, like trying to put him in. He said, "No, hey guy, you know it's all good. It's all good." Like
it's unsettling.
Come back. Like it's almost like he's telling both Adam Scott.
There's a smile to his face, but you could tell in his eyes, it's like, fuck you for what you did.
He's like telling Adam Scott, "Hey, welcome back," but also us, the viewer, "Hey, welcome back. We've missed you." And it's crazy to see, like, the first season that aired, the first episode was February 2022. The first episode for this new season will come out on January 17th, 2025. So almost 3 years after the first one.
It's been a long time.
It's been a minute.
New normal for TV, apparently. Long time between episodes. Look,
if it takes that long just to make a quality product, I'm all cool with, and, you know, I don't
put this behind them. You know, funny enough, Slow Horses is popping out seasons like it's nothing. I had to catch up on that show. But it's coming out, like, I think the last two seasons came out within a year.
Say Slow Horses? Okay.
Yeah, within a year, like 6-8 months of each other. It's just, they're just popping them out. Severance is a little more... It is sci-fi, but it doesn't have a lot of fancy sets and high-level technology. It's low sci-fi, right? Yeah. But there's obviously a stacked cast, stacked writing team to keep it interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So probably the best, quality-wise, probably the best thing Apple TV's put out. Definitely recommend watching season one in anticipation, and if you haven't already.
Yes, sir. And
all right. So kicking it off to our big review of the week. We're going to review episodes 1-4 of The Penguin.
Dude, like, just...
Take us through some of the setting codes.
Just wow. I just want to say just wow. So, yeah, so the Penguin, for you guys out there, it's actually a follow-up little mini-series, follow-up to The Batman, the 2022 film directed by Matt Reeves, the Robert Pattinson version. And this is about the character from the movie The Penguin, played by Colin Farrell. And this takes place, you know, a couple days at the end of The Batman, where the Riddler flooded all of Gotham, like destroyed everything. This series, The Penguin, takes place, you know, a couple weeks after that, and the Penguin trying to pick up the pieces, literally, of like his life that's been washed away, and rise back to the top. And he has other people gutting for the same position, and we have Kristen Milani, your mother from How I Met Your Mother, who's amazing in this, and other players who are also vying for that spot. And it's a great series, great homage.
Through some of the leads, Cozy. We got Colin Farrell.
Obviously. Oh, me, yeah, we get definitely. I mentioned Colin Farrell. I mentioned Kristen Milani. We also have Clancy Brown, who's always great in whatever he's in. Carmen Ejogo.
Clancy Brown again?
Clancy Brown is Maroney, Salvatore Maroney. He's a guy who was in prison the whole time. Theo Rossi, you might remember him as Shades from
Luke Cage.
Mark Strong coming in to replace John Turturro. He actually played Carmine Falcone in the Batman, but for scheduling conflict. I believe because he was filming Severance, I think.
He said something along the lines of he didn't want to film a character that was so violent to women the other day.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
But I think it was a big part of it was just a scheduling conflict.
Gotcha. Yeah, but we... yeah.
Mark Strong, at least in his first scene, looks a lot like John Turturro.
But he's also playing... he's playing a younger version of John Turturro's character, So I can see...
Yeah, 10 years younger.
Yeah.
He pulls it off.
Definitely. But yeah, stacked cast.
Doug from House of Cards. I forgot his name. The guy who's VD, or the cousin.
Yes. The bald dude. Yeah, we we have a couple House of Cards people, a couple Sopranos people up in this show too. I just loved just the whole, not just the cast, but just the look, the writing, just over, I guess trying to get ahead into this, but like just overall thoughts. Yeah, I thought this was just a very, very strong show. So what did you think of the show overall?
So taking it through again, so only first four episodes,
It's
already episode five already out, but we'll cover that. But we'll cover that. Probably do a review once the season's out.
Yeah, for sure.
Once the full season's out. No, so listen, obviously the obvious comparison here is The Sopranos, I think, would be the biggest one.
And Godfather. The first two Godfather movies.
It feels a little more like Sopranos and maybe even Goodfellas more than necessarily The Godfather.
I see some Goodfellas up in there.
Like The Godfather, yes, obviously there's an Italian mob and stuff, but The Godfather presented it almost in a kind of regal way. It almost made you think the mob was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was almost like a Greek tragedy almost. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
As a Greek tragedy with the mob, you kind of feel for the mob, you buy into their honor and stuff. This, you know, you're taking it from the perspective of the Penguin, who's not, you know, a scion of one of these mob families.
He's not born
with a silver spoon in his mouth. Yeah. He has to work his way up. He's a poor asshole from a shitty family who had to gain everything from himself. So, you know, for him, the gangster system, the mafia system is not all this cool, you know, regal system of lineage where of loyalty and stuff. No, it's just, you know, people being assholes and he's trying to be the biggest asshole so he can get his and get what he deserves and get the respect he feels that he's been denied his whole life. Obviously, he got his weird waddle because his foot is all fucked up.
Which was a really, really gross visual.
Yeah, gross has a foot. So people call him a penguin. Not like in the Batman show where it's like, oh, penguin, like a fancy aristocrat type with a fancy tuxedo. No, like penguin, like, oh, he waddles around and is kind of fat and grotesque looking. So, you know, it's a way to insult him. It's a way to demean him and treat him as a piece of shit, as beneath the real gangsters, the real made men, the real capos, all these people.
Right.
And he's just kind of useful and amusing. And the series beats you over the head with it. They let you know.
They really do that.
That none of these guys respect him. That none of these people treat him as an equal. They all treat him as a tool, as an amusement, somebody who can be useful,
but I think
and then discarded.
I think that works to like really, really like show his rise. Like they really need to know like how, where he is in the totem pole, so like you can see his trajectory. So I definitely can see like why that was.
He's one of those characters that understands. Reminds me of that Tyrion Lannister quote from episode one of Game of Thrones, where like, you know, if you wear your weakness as an armor, you wear it proudly. Yep. It can't be used against you.
Yeah.
Right. I can't remember the exact line. But, you know, it's basically like he even says something like that. You know, he makes himself small so that these mafia people and these mob bosses can feel big.
Yeah, like he embrace like what makes you different. Remember at the dinner at that table with Victor's character, where because Victor has that stutter, and he's like, hey man, like you shouldn't stop him from saying it. Say your stutter, like live your.
So Victor's like, kind of like his little life. Henchman. He picks up from the streets, and yeah, one of those big things that he has a stutter. And again, in the Penguin, a Colin Farrell's character, Oz Cobb, Oswald Cobb. They got rid of the Cobblepot, which honestly, I'm a fan of that. Cobblepot sounds like a goofy name,
for
a real life person.
Like this one, it sounds more like he comes from like a rougher town, not from like.
He's not an aristocrat. He's not like some rich aristocrat.
He's from the neighborhood.
So, Oz Cobb. So, you can tell the Penguin sees a little bit of himself. He's walking around with a limp. He's not being taken seriously. He's being treated as a joke. So, he sees this guy that has this stutter. That can't get his message. That has some ambition, but obviously is getting underestimated. And he says, hey, use that and take up space. Is the line Colin Farrell says.
What I thought was cool about Victor's character, like, because Oswald comes upon him when he and his friends are, like, trying to boost his car, kind of like how Jason Todd was trying to boost Batman's car in the comics. It was kind of a really cool, like, almost, like, mirror to that, but, like, it's kind of the villain's version. Cool, he kind of found his own little Robin in there and, like, kind of trying to put Victor on this path, and like, because Victor's a good kid in a mad city, basically, and like, Penguin sees this, but he's gonna manipulate that, and I thought that was brilliant.
You know, I think manipulate in a sense, but in another sense, I think Penguin truly, it's like almost like it's like a mentor.
Yeah, like he definitely sees a bit of himself in Victor.
Yeah, he's a little bit of himself. He truly seems to want the best. It's a tragic tale because you can almost tell. Guy like the Penguin, guy like Oscob, you know, you can just tell at some point he's going to betray Victor. At some point, it's going to be him and Victor. It's going to be a situation where he's going to benefit by screwing over Victor. And there's a part of him that'll feel bad about it. There's a part of him that'll know it's wrong and that will kind of hate himself for it. But there's a bigger part of him that'll be like, no, it's me, myself, and I. Yeah. I got to get mine. And, you know, he's raised that way. We see his mom, actually, I think in episode 2.
And before, and we do see in episode 2, but I got to just say this. Going back to the point you just said in the beginning, I want to just establish this. I say it's like The Godfather because it's not just a story about the Penguin in this, but also it's a story of Chris Meladio's characters.
That's a good point. We haven't talked about her.
Yeah, like, and I'll get into her character. So Sophia Falcone, it's her story. Sophia Falcone, for me, kind of reminded me of...
It's like a dual protagonist situation.
Of Michael Corleone, to me. Because both are characters who are in the family, but they're not really trying to get their hands dirty, but they're kind of pushed into it. In Michael Corleone's case in Godfather, it's kind of like a... All right, I'll do this because I have a noble, you know, almost like a Greek, almost like regal ode to my family. But for Sophia's case, she's kind of like, she's double-crossed. She's betrayed by her family, and she has to become this mob person. And like, there are certain shots where like, she's having to address her family that like, it looks like scenes like right out of the first Godfather. There's even a scene where she's you know, because she's a woman, they don't really like her uncles and whatnot. Who after her dad died, there's like a whole like power vacuum, and like they don't really give her the respect, and they kind of like literally close the door in her face, very reminiscent of the end of the first Godfather, where Michael closes the door in his wife's face, and just like these little hints there that like I definitely saw it as almost not like a straight up remake of the Godfather, but like definitely an homage to like and thematically and in like shot and shot wise, but
there's
like,
definitely yeah. There's a movie that wears its references to other mob movies.
Oh yeah.
Proudly. It's a little bit like the first Joker, how it was blatantly referencing other Scorsese films.
Yeah, King of the Comedy.
Taxi Driver, the biggest ones.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
But yeah, going back to Chris Meladio, she did, again, in terms of like performances that should get nominations, her performance as Sophia Falcone has just been incredible. Just her journey, watching her backstory, watching her to now, like...
Episode 4 went deep into the details of what happened to her. Basically, we start off the series. She looks kind of like crazy goth emo girl. She has the nickname The Hangman.
You're told
that she was in Arkham Asylum, that she killed a bunch of women. She has the nickname The Hangman.
Because all her victims were hung.
All her victims were found hanging. So that's the establishing, and she plays up to that. She has this unsettling feel. You find out she's been in Arkham for 10 years, so it's not surprising that she has a kind of crazy eyes and crazy personality.
Even if she wasn't
crazy before going in there, being in, you know, an asylum for 10 years will do that to you.
And actually, it's not just that, like, we think that she's going to go in there just for a couple of weeks for her trial, but then her brother comes in and is like, hey, sorry, but like, you're in there for like 10 years.
She's supposed to be in there for 6 months originally. Yeah. It's supposed to be a temporary. Even the 6 months is incredibly rough on her.
Yeah, they beat
her up.
And then
she ends up getting stayed there for 10 years. Basically, the backstory is that her father's a serial killer, killed her mother, and then killed a bunch of other women.
And then when
Kristen Milotti's character, when Sophia Falcone started basically catching on to that and realizing he killed her mother.
And she started talking to the press a little bit too.
He caught wind of that. A journalist told her what was happening basically, and she realized from her memories that it all matched up. And so basically her father's reaction is to send her to an insane asylum.
Cold-blooded, bro.
Because she started to suspect that... Oh, no, she started to realize that he had killed her own mother.
Send her and also kill her? Question. I think he said send people in there to kill her too. He kind of did. Yeah, I think so.
At the very least, to make sure she was going to be there forever. Yeah, I don't know if she was like... Maybe he wasn't quite willing to just outright kill her.
Right. Definitely didn't make her stay the best.
Yeah, but anyway, so now, I mean, her father's dead from the Batman movie.
Right.
And so she's out. She got out with the help of her brother.
Dude, and he's from Mrs. Maisel. He's the husband, but like, cool to see him, but holy shit, like a really big, again, this will contain spoilers spoilers for the episode, but like, Oz just taking him out in the first episode, like to establish like he's not playing around, and how that
not just not playing around
the fallout of that.
What he's willing to do. So basically, Sophia's brother has been named the replacement to Carmine Falcone. He's the new head of the Falcone family,
and it was originally gonna be her, but like.
And, you know, it's supposed to, and he's like a jackhead. He's the traditional, you'd almost think he was Russian instead of Italian, traditional jackass party boy. If you've seen John Wick,
he's like Theon in that movie. Okay.
Yeah, Theon in that movie.
No, he's not as much of a little shit, but yeah.
He's not quite as much, but he's still a pretty big shit. And then, so, you know, Penguin, Oswald Cobblepot tries to open up a little bit, tell him kind of his dreams and stuff, and you know, basically, Oswald Cobb does not like being disrespected. He understands what he looks like. He understands he looks ugly. He understands he waddles around. He understands people don't take him entirely seriously, but he has that insecurity of being openly disrespected. Doesn't help that you see from a little bit of his interaction with his mother that his mom is the kind of type that was like, hey, you know, you gotta be a man and you gotta do this.
But look, Albert straight up was insulting him. Like, he laughed at him, called that him too. A bitch. Like,
but you know, as far as Sopranos references, Penguin's mom kind of reminds me of the Sopranos mom.
Yes, that was
mom.
The big one.
That was a problem mom with that same shitty attitude. Like, oh, my son's a little bitch who doesn't do things the manly way like he should.
And instead of having the therapist, he has Eva Carlo, the prostitute, as like that. Like, she kind of fills in from that psychiatrist role. Yeah.
And he's not married and stuff, right? Right. Exactly. Right. Shit, so. The movie plays around with a lot with that, the psychology of both Oz, the way he desperately wants to prove and grow and be on top, the way he almost seems to care about certain people.
His mother, especially.
He cares about his mother. He cares in some way about Vic and Sophia.
Definitely cares about Eve. To an extent, he used her as an alibi, which is kind of messed up.
He cares about them, but at the end of the day, when he needs something, when something is going to benefit him personally, he's going to do it, right? Ideally, he's not going to fuck over his family, right? Ideally, he can have what he wants and, you know, save people. But if he has to choose, it's always going to be the thing that puts him on top.
Right. Case in point, this was brilliant. So Vic messes up trying to get the jewels out of the car. So that plan's messed up. He's face to face now with the guy who's going to tell Sophia, hey, who killed her brother? So Oswald just calls an audible and just kills the informant. But before he does it, it's like, hey, man, make sure. Like, stuff like that, it's like, it's...
He's
conniving, calculated, so cold though. Just
it's incredible
using people
to watch because every character he interacts with knows he's full of shit.
He knows he's sizing them up.
Every character he interacts with knows he's willing to say whatever to get ahead.
Victor didn't initially, but now Victor's getting smart to his BS, I think.
A little bit. Yeah. But even Victor's kind of innocent in all this.
Yeah, he's still naive. Still definitely naive.
His family died. It's a rough time for him. Yeah. The Riddler attack killed his family. But I think a big thing is that even though they know he's a piece of shit, even though they know he's not really trustworthy, even though they know he's conniving and they don't respect him, they all still somehow end up working with him.
He's magnetic.
He has this magnetic genius.
Yeah, it's Oz, yeah.
He has this magnetic genius where they should all just put a bullet in their head, in his head, and save themselves the trouble. But then they all think, this guy's going to be useful to me.
But because Oz knows how to talk, he knows how to spin, he knows how to really get in your good graces in a good way. He did it with Sophia. He definitely did it with Salvatore's wife. Kind of backfired a little bit, but, you know, he's good at that, and, like, he's good at establishing these relationships, and, like, again, he uses people.
Yeah, he's trying to play everybody against each other. Yeah. A little bit of a Littlefinger feel.
Definitely Littlefinger feel. Definitely.
Character, big fish and a small fish in a big pond, trying to outplay the bigger fish.
But he still gets his hands dirty, like, case in point, like, killing that informant, but making sure the informant, like, no, like, just stuff like that where, like, he's playing this so-and-so, the Game of Thrones, or Gotham in this case, really well. And, you know, we'll see what happens with him.
No, it's been one of the best series of the year. The tone, the psychological aspect, Kristen Milioti's performance.
Her eyes.
Is there anything you don't like about it, Kosi? Anything you want to take away from it?
I guess some things I don't like a little bit are just pacing issues in some of the episodes. Again, I think with any... It definitely feels like we're ramping up towards something, and I think it's just a common thing.
It doesn't feel like a movie that got stretched out, though.
Yeah, it's just a common thing.
It does feel like it's supposed to be a TV show, which I like. A lot of Marvel stuff feels like a movie that was stretched out to eight episodes.
The first couple episodes are establishing everybody, like all the pieces that we're going to see on this chessboard. Definitely had an episode to establish Sophia, which I don't mind at all, but like it didn't really push... It pushed her stuff forward, but not maybe the whole story as a whole.
It did because she killed most of her family.
Yes. At the end of that, So again, it's a small little gripe. I have almost zero gripe. Again, like
it's a 10 out of 10 show.
The costuming is great. The shot selection is great. It legit looks like a movie. Still, it looks like it looks big, but it doesn't look cheap. It looks like they really put it
one
in
thing
there.
Too for people who are worried. So it clearly ties in and follows up on the events of the Batman.
Oh yeah, you have little Easter eggs. Yeah,
not even just Easter eggs. Like it's hard to fully 100% follow everything without knowing what's going on in the Batman. But at the same time, you just kind of need to know a few place setting details. The series mostly stands on its own.
Yeah, it's about the Falconis and the Maronis. It's not really about like the Batman, and that's more of the backdrop.
I understand, like, people are like, okay, oh, I don't want to watch another comic book movie.
It's not
whatever.
A comic book
it's more,
show.
It's something much more along the lines of a new Sopranos that just so happens to have a lot of the proper nouns associated with a Batman show. Batman movie specifically.
You
the Matt Reeves ones.
You definitely hear the words Arkham. You hear the word Gotham. Like, you know,
and they definitely... The events of the first movie play deep into the setup and the plot of this one.
And I think, I do believe that this show will all even set up stuff we'll see in the Batman 2 that they're making right now. I love the world building they're doing with this because Gotham is, you know, is a big, it's huge, it's sprawling, and like we're seeing little parts of his underbelly, the rich parts, and like all the stuff in this show, and you know, just. Big ups to the people making this. You know, we're four episodes down. We have four more to go. And well, I'm
but,
excited.
So as far as a few things, I wasn't a huge fan of.
Oh, sure, yeah.
A biggest one was that the opening exposition I thought was goofy and kind of dumb.
Oh, like the news?
The newsreel? It was like a bunch of local news channels.
Yeah,
we're
kind of flipping through the channels.
Talking about, you know, the inner workings of a crime mob family. Like they're talking about the Kardashians, you know, they're just casually like, oh, new head of the family, Alberto Falcone, is a bit of a drinker. It's like, what?
It was like a real quick, convenient way to get us up to speed.
Like, I get that they, like, you know, always have to have exposition dumps and it's always awkward. I just felt like, I don't know, they could have easily had it where, like, the police chief was explaining to somebody the current situation, or even it could have been Oscorp explaining to somebody, the Falconis are in disarray. Alberto's in charge now, but he likes to hit the bottles.
Almost like you would have wanted like a voiceover.
Not necessarily a voiceover.
That's
kind of
cheesy too.
It could have just had like the Penguin having a conversation with somebody.
Okay, you don't. All right.
I could have. Even that first conversation with Alberto, they could have done a lot of it. It's like, oh, like, what are you stealing the scenes? They could be like, oh, so you're I hear you're the new boss in charge now. You're, you could tell me you're your father's son, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and then it could have been like, instead of telling you, oh, Alberto seems like he has an alcohol problem, it could have been like, hey, why not? Let's go celebrate you being the new boss. Drinks on me, and then you see him getting wasted, and then you know you infer they show not tell that he's an alcoholic and a druggie.
Okay,
right. Okay, so I feel like pure voiceover would have been goofy too. Right, but they could have had like somebody informing the new mayor, like the police chief informing the mayor.
About okay, what's going
here's
on.
Here's the situation with this. Like the I don't know, the idea of the local news. Doing it seems goofy.
Or just showing local news. Yeah, I definitely see what you mean.
Like, they didn't even drop allegedly. They were just like, oh, yeah, here's a new head of the crime boss family. It's like, this isn't E-Entertainment where they're just showing who the... I don't know. It just felt goofy.
I got you, man.
And then I could see some of the pacing issues.
It's minor issues, though.
Minor issue. I mean, it's an incredible show. Yeah. It sometimes does veer into a little almost comic booky in terms of... I don't know how to say it. Like just some of the dialogue, some of the play setting and stuff, it feels like it won't go kind of as artsy or as prestigious or as metaphorical as something like a Sopranos or a Casinos, like an actual Scorsese.
I think that's a bit of a strength because I think that's it knowing what it is. Because it knows that it's set in DC Universe. It kind of, it'll play to those motifs,
fair.
I think.
That's fair. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. It's just, frankly, it's more... It's such a good show that it almost feels like it should be the kind of show that gets mentioned, you know, 10 years from now. It's like, oh, we're talking about all-time mob shows? Oh, yeah, obviously there's Sopranos and clearly Penguin's up there. Oh. And it feels like right now it's a little content. Not quite content. It's still an amazing show. But it feels like, okay, we're going to set the upper boundary at what we think the best comic book movie can accomplish is. Does that make sense? We're not going to take it that one step farther where it's like, okay, this is going to be an all-time piece of art.
I'll still say this. We are only 4 episodes in. That could change by episode 8.
It could.
Because I think we'll have a bigger idea of what it is.
I think there's a little bit of a safeness there. I think the DC has a little bit of... I think there's just a little bit of holding back.
I don't know, man. They're doing stuff in the show that we've seen in... Sopranos and Goodfellas and Godfather. I see what you mean. I think they're swinging for it.
I think they're holding back just a little bit. Just a little bit. Maybe it's in my mind. Maybe it's in my mind.
It's not even a criticism.
It's like, I say what you mean. Hey, this is an A plus show. It could be
A plus plus.
A triple plus show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it sounds goofy to say, but it's just like, I really feel like the performances here. The work here, the shot, the story. Okay, like another example, like the fact that they had to bring in this new kind of goofy drug that's clearly like a comic book type drug.
Oh, from the mushrooms?
Yeah, the mushrooms.
It is a kind of roundabout way to get the drug.
It just feels like a comic book drug where it just feels like over the top, right? You know, in real life, there's just heroin and oxy and fentanyl and stuff.
Again,
you don't need like fancy weird mushrooms. You just need normal stuff.
I see what you mean, but one, if this was the Many Saints of Newark, that would just be some red meth. But this is the Penguin.
If it was the Many Saints of Newark, it would be like, okay. And the red meth would just be a marketing gimmick, right? It would just be like, okay, it's just meth. We just put a little like, it just happened, the chemical formula happened to make it red. It's just a little chemical gimmick, but it's still meth.
But it's the Penguin.
We're not pretending, you know what this is. If it's Breaking Bad, it might be blue, but it's meth. It's not a brand new thing. Oh no, it's Bliss and we have drops. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like, it clearly should have just been heroin.
The drops were established in the Batman is the drug of choice on the streets. These are just like super drops or like an
evolution. I get it. But it felt like a little bit like, oh man, if we say heroin, we have to put an R rating. You know what I mean?
But it's like, your show's already R rated. You got a guy had his eye gouged out.
That's true. I think it is a rated M.
It's rated R, but I think that's again, it's straight out of a comic book. Or would be in a comic book. Oh,
yeah.
The drugs come from this mushroom. Yeah. Kind of like in Nolan's Batman.
Yeah.
Oh, that flower I got, you have to go to a freaking Himalayas to get it. And take that flower and make it into the poison in the third act of the movie.
Yeah, it's just like, You know, it's like, hey, we're doing a realistic crime show. Just say heroin. Just say heroin.
But Christopher Nolan.
Just say it's a special. Flower. Just say it's a special heroin that they got from the Middle East or something, right? Like magical poppies. I don't know, but like, you know what I mean? It's like criticism. I'm loving the show.
I can't
stress enough that I am riveted. But I can't wait to see what happens next.
It's appointment television again on HBO. They're the kings of that. They have Game of Thrones and House of Dragon now. They have every Sunday.
That is better than House of Dragon.
You can come in.
That's better than House of Dragon.
I have to wait for the whole eight.
I do want
to
see the whole thing
first. I'm enjoying the hell out of every episode.
I think season two. Season one of House of Dragon was pretty excellent. Mm. Season two was a little off.
Yeah, season one of House of Dragon is in perfection. But yeah, I can't. But this series, The Penguin, has been phenomenal. Can't wait to see what they do with it again. Tune in every Sunday to see.
So, Cozy, each episode. What are you dropping your rating for this? I'm gonna have to drop it.
Oh man,
9 out of 10 suits. Nine out of ten suits.
I won't give it a 10 out of 10 because I still did. I definitely had some minor issues with this. Yeah, but this will definitely get a definite 9 quacks. Out of 10.
Nine quacks out of 10. That seems excellent. Very reasonable. It does feel like you want to hesitate to give it a 10. It's like a 9.5. You know what I mean?
And
it's
also like tens are rare. Tens are like
ten has to be the kind of stuff where we're confident, you know, 10 years from now, somebody's going to be looking back and that's still a 10.
Exactly.
That's still a 10.
Exactly.
If 10 years from now, people are asking, what the fuck was that show? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like... There's a difference. There's a difference.
Exactly.
It's a. It's like okay. Everybody remembers Friends. Not everybody remembers Everybody Loves Raymond. Does that make sense?
I see. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, everybody remembers Seinfeld.
They're both beloved shows. Yeah.
Not everybody remembers Scrubs.
Or everyone loves Cheers, and oddly enough, not everybody remembers Frasier.
That's another solid.
Even though. Again, two beloved shows. Yeah. Again, not saying Frasier. No one like no. But like people in the zeitgeist and memory, Cheers is more like, so there than Frasier.
I think ended close to 20 years ago now. It was what was it? 2000.
It was 2007. I think it was 2007.
Yeah, closer than looking, bro. Yeah, we're talking about close to 20 years ago, and that's still the go-to. Oh, we're talking about a mob show. Oh yeah, Sopranos.
Yeah, 2007. Yeah, it's
Sopranos.
It's considered instantly. Like
it's considered one of the golden era TV shows.
It's The Wire, but for white people, I always say.
It's the gangster version.
For Italian people.
It's the gangster version of The Wire.
Yeah.
Right. It's the mob great. Version of The Wire.
Yeah. I put that up there with like Breaking Bad is definitely up there with shows.
That it's some of that golden era of television. Yeah. It's the kind of stuff that everything gets compared to. If you have an Italian mob in your show, people are going to be like, "Oh, it's The Sopranos," right? Mm. Just like talking about. So I don't think this is quite. It has four more episodes to do so. It has four more episodes to do so. And I'm loving it.
But
I'm
a 9 out of 10 is great. A 9 out of 10 rating.
A 9 out of 10 is great. Highly recommended. One of the best shows of this year.
Oh yeah.
No, can't say enough good things about it.
Quack quack
quack quack.
All right, man.
All right, man. So I think it's time for plug of the week.
Plug of the week.
Let's plug it.
You know what? I'll go first with my plug of the week. It's been a while. It's been a while, but I want to plug this a new horror movie. Came out on Shudder. It actually debuted a couple weeks ago. Called VHS Beyond. So VHS is a whole franchise. This is actually the seventh. Actually, it's the ninth installment of the VHS franchise, going all the way back to 2014. There are these found footage movies that have like a little wraparound segment that you know like. Kind of has a theme for them all, and different horror directors come in and like do different segments, and so VHS Beyond is the most recent one. I've loved this series. Series is kind of taking a little dip a few of them. My favorite
is it a TV show or
no, it's a movie series, but like it's like a bunch of like found footage or like different media movies, like the guy that did The Raid and It Comes to Night. That movie called something tonight. Like he directed a couple segments of this. So different directors. Even have Scott Derrickson doing some segments. So in this most recent one, VHS Beyond, it's about aliens and extraterrestrials and stuff like that. It's great. There's one segment that really Unsettle Me. It's called Fur Babies. It's written, directed by Justin Long. Great guy. Nice. We saw him in Barbarian most recently.
Justin Long, baby.
Yeah, that he delivered the most unsettling segment in VHS Beyond. Yeah, you can find it on the Shudder app. You can get Shudder for $5.99 and watch all types of stuff. Justin
Long founding some kind of weird torture basement under his house.
Oh my god.
And then immediately thinking,
give me the tape measure
so I can see how much I can rent this room out for.
He looks up, hey, are underground dwellings bullshit or can I make money off of it?
It's genius.
Loved him.
What
loved
a piece him. Of shit character.
Dude, side thing. So Zach Krieger, the guy that did Barbarian, the movie with him in it, mm-hmm. he initially, do you know who he wanted to get first before he got Justin Long?
Who?
Zac Efron. Ooh. And Zac Efron, I think, was just like, no, I'm not feeling this. And, like, passed.
Oof.
Yeah. Would have.
You know, I can't hate on him because Iron Claw, I've heard incredible things. I still gotta watch that.
Yeah, I think he went on to do Iron Claw.
I still gotta watch Iron
Claw. Oh, it's great. Yeah, I think he went on to do Iron Claw, actually. But, yeah.
Wild that Troy from High School Musical has become an incredible actor. Can we talk about that?
In the air, man. Everywhere. Wave your hands up. In the air.
But, so for my plug of the week, I almost feel like it's malpractice to actively plug this. But I have to shout this out because at some point we're going to try to do a proper review of this movie.
Okay.
I am going to shout out and... I don't even think it's in theaters anymore, so good luck. But Megalopolis, Francis Ford Coppola's final...
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so is a good term for it. I don't think he has enough money to keep making these.
No, I think...
He had to finance it himself.
Someone just trip him or like throw a banana peel.
Somebody had to... He had to finance it himself, sell the big punch of his wine empire.
Juan, lock him in a closet, please, just so he can just...
Now listen, y'all. It's... When I say I hesitate to plug this and encourage people to watch this,
week, right?
I mean, the most succinct and pithy description I can say of this movie is probably the most fun and enjoyment I've had at any theater experience this year.
Bring the whole family, huh? Okay.
But I don't think I would actively recommend anybody on earth watch this.
There we go.
Okay. I don't know. The comparisons I can make to this. Well, I won't do a full review, but we'll do a little bit of extended plug. Yeah. Like The Room, in terms of sheer earnestness by a director making something.
His vision, yeah.
So. One thing about this movie, and again, similar to The Room, you get used to, with Hollywood, a certain level of base quality, like certain standards for how movies are made, for how they're written. Even bad movies tend to be like, okay, here's a beginning, middle, end.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to like, oh, hey, if we set something up in the first act, we have to at least reference. Even if it's a stupid thing, we have to like reference it
just for third act. For continuity's sake.
Yeah. There's a certain, you know, art style. Again, there's just a certain basic competence that you take for granted. You know, even something like stupid, like Borderlands, it's like, okay, it's a bad movie, but it's not like a truly like... You know, it's not amateurish.
Still competently made.
Yeah, it's not amateur. It's you could tell professionals made it. You could tell people who have cut their teeth on other Hollywood movies made this. It might not have the most visual, like, creative visual angles. Might not have terrific acting. Might be a mess in a lot of ways. But there's just a certain competence you grow used to expect.
So you're telling me after watching Megalopolis, it didn't seem as though, like, one of the greatest filmmakers ever... made this movie? That what you're
it
to
did
say?
Not seem
that's crazy.
Like he had any kind of quality control of this movie.
It's that dude. This is Coppola.
People
bro.
Like plot points would come up and then just be dropped like two scenes later.
And listeners, this is Francis Ford Coppola. He did The Godfather.
He did Godfather and Apocalypse
like
Now.
Some of the greatest movies of all. Like Godfather 2 is like I think one of the, it's the greatest sequel ever made.
Godfather 2 and Apocalypse Now could easily be considered. Like, if you're talking about top three movies from any director.
Yeah.
Now top three probably goes over anybody else's.
That's amazing.
Like, if we're just talking about the top peak of somebody's career, it's hard to beat this guy's peak, right? And if you went into this movie thinking, hey, I'm going to watch the finale of a genius director's great career, you are going to be unbelievably disappointed. Dude. This shit makes no sense. Plots are picked up and dropped. There's a lot of stuff. Okay, so I went in so deeply inebriated that I had to get my wife to take me to the theater.
To order an Uber.
I literally had to be like, hey, I cannot. It would be dangerous for me to transport myself to the theater. I apologize for this, wife.
Uber me,
oh,
babe.
By the way, wife, don't come to the theater with me, because I'm almost positive you're going to have a miserable time if you watch this movie. But I just need to experience it.
No,
I
save
just
yourself.
Need,
drop
I need
me
to.
Off.
From what I've seen and heard, I just needed to experience it. And holy shit, bro, I don't think I've laughed so hard in a long... I just pure laughter and joy, but at stuff that I don't think was necessarily supposed to be a joke.
Yep.
An actual quote at a pivotal moment, not too many spoilers, but an actual quote at a pivotal moment is John Voight saying, check out this boner I got, while he's laying in a bear pretending to be suffering from a stroke. Like post-stroke, he says, check out this boner I got. And then he pulls out a bow and arrow and kills. This movie makes no sense.
Okay, now I got to see this. Okay, Juan, now you're selling me on the movie.
This
now.
Movie
okay,
makes
you sold me. You
absolutely
sold me. Okay.
No sense. There's that one point where Adam Driver starts to quote Hamlet's soliloquy, you know, to be or not to be, blah, blah, blah. You know, people do that for a little bit. We all have to memorize like 20 lines of it in high school. Yeah. It goes for like a good 5 minutes. He just keeps going.
Kylo Ren, stop, bro.
It's so awkward.
Dude, I got to check this out.
And you start laughing. You start laughing. And again, you're not entirely sure. At one point, they bring up a storyline about how Shia LaBeouf is possibly, like, the catch will be like,
he's in this.
Yeah, they go like, Shia LaBeouf might be fucking his sister. Oh, really?
Louis Stevens. What are you doing, bro?
He might be fucking his... And then they just never bring it up again. Oh. And then later on, he's standing up on top of a swastika stump, giving a stump speech about like how Adam Driver's character is bad. I will say Shia LaBeouf and Audrey Plaza, her character's name is Wow Platinum. Wow Platinum. There's a big scene where somebody just calls her Auntie Wow repeatedly while she's getting eaten out. Her pussy's getting eaten out. It's a mindfuck. Don't try to pay attention to the actual messages and themes and plots of this movie. It's not some... Oh, man. I really got to give it a proper review where we go into like a lot of this detail.
I legit can't wait for your player haters. And look out for that.
I don't know if
listeners.
Player haters is the right thing because, again, I deeply connected with the experience of this movie.
Whatever it is, we got.
But we have to. I want to bring Eric in here because he had a miserable time watching this movie.
Oh my God, yeah.
He had an absolutely miserable time watching this movie.
We will. All right, it's just in. We'll have a Megalopolis episode, viewers, so look out for that.
He clearly went to a theater where people were expecting greatness.
Didn't he go with his dad?
He went to his dad sober, expecting like a packed theater opening night, expecting greatness. I went to a theater with five other people, looked like college-age dudes.
That's great.
And clearly they were there for the memes. They were laughing. They were laughing at every single line I was laughing. It was a wonderful communal experience.
I have faith in young people.
It was
again.
About 5-6 people. All right. All of us got the joke. All of us knew how ridiculous. I don't know, man. It's an experience. Whatever else you want to say, whatever else critique, it's a true experience. You go into Borderlands, you're going to go bored as fuck. You're going to forget you watch it the next day. You go into this, I was giggling my ass off 2 days later at just every one of the lines in this movie, bro.
Well,
genius stuff. Well, genius madness.
Megalopolis, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. It is probably a final film. Check it out if you can.
You're going to go broke for this. He did not make good money on that movie.
Of course not.
And deservedly so. That's not a movie with mass appeal. You have to have a very certain mindset to get enjoyment out of that film.
Thanks, Juan, for the plug of the week. Dude, this is a... Great to be back.
Great to be back, Cozy. Love seeing you again. Dude, love doing this.
Dude.
Been a fun time. Watch The Penguin, y'all.
Please watch The Penguin.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
One of the top shows of the year.
Yeah, man.
watch Megalopolis Plus when it comes out on streaming just for the memes.
Just for the get, LOLs, like, guys.
Just have a flask. It doesn't matter if you're in your house. Just have a flask on hand. You're not going to want to be stopping to pour shots. You take a shot every time somebody says something ridiculous and you can just go to the hospital afterwards.
You'll be dead. But thanks, viewers. Hey, Juan, thank you for showing up, and also thank you guys for always listening for this episode. Again, you can find us on Spotify under the name It Was Mooney. You can also find us on YouTube under It Was Mooney under the same name. Again, look out for stuff like our Megalopolis review with Eric coming out soon, and other videos coming out. So again, I've been Cosi, and I've been always joined by Juan E.B. Until next time, guys. Adios.
Adios.
Peace out.